Hey, everyone. I hope you enjoyed listening to our full episode with Kyle MacLachlan. If you haven't listened, go check it out. He is an absolute delight of a human being. But I also wanted to share a little more from that conversation that we did with Kyle in Seattle. Before we started our wildcard conversation, I talked to Kyle about his longtime collaborator, David Lynch, who had just died a couple of months before we taped this. Kyle knew David for 4 decades, and he had worked with him on Dune and Blue Velvet and the original Twin Peaks and the reboot. So we spent a few minutes just reflecting on David, who was definitely one of the most fascinating people I've ever talked to on this show. And I loved hearing Kyle think back on his time with his friend and his mentor. So I wanted to share that conversation with you in this bonus episode. I hope you enjoy it. And just a heads up, there's a touch of cursing in this episode. I do want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about David Lynch.
Oh, thank you.
Because I know he was so incredibly important to
me. He was... I have a career, really, because of David, because my first two films were with David, Dune and Blue Velvet, and he was like no other person in the world, you know, so specific, so singular, so interesting, so kind, so funny, so generous, such a great sense of humor. And, you know, the thing about David that I learned, particularly when we were filming Twin Peaks, is the worlds that he creates. So he didn't create Dune, but he created Blue Velvet and he created Twin Peaks, among other things. But those worlds for David really existed. Mm. They were in his mind, and they were populated by the people that he created. And outside, when we were actually performing, we were those people. So I wasn't Kyle, or Kale, as he liked to call me. And that's a funny story. You probably know that story, but, well, we'll tell that story. Anyway, I was Coop. And he loved Twin Peaks so much that he wanted to live in that world. He wanted to be in that world. And so he created Gordon Cole. Gordon Cole, you know? And how much fun was it, and sort of shocking, that I was talking to my director and friend as Gordon Cole. And he came up with the whole idea of the, you know, the hard of hearing thing and the whole thing. Yeah. It just was, yeah. You know.
Why did he call you Kale?
Oh, well, in our first film together, Dune, it was produced by Dino De Laurentiis. Dino De Laurentiis. He talked like this. And he couldn't say my name.
Oh, Dino couldn't.
So I was Kale, and David just loved that. So he called me Kale, and so I have a son. My wife and I have a son named Callum, C-A-L-L-U-M, but he's not Callum, he's Calum. Just that kind of stuff.
So, how do I say this and not have it be offensive? What did he see in you? Because, but you know what I mean.
I asked myself the same. Question.
You were so young. You went to UW. You were just like a fresh little...
I know. I did. I went to UW.
Baby actor person.
I was totally a baby actor person. I was so, like, clueless. You know, we met... I graduated in 82.
82!
Is anybody left?
82 graduates!
Okay, that's all right. Never mind. I think it was our first meeting, right? We sat in a little bungalow on the back lot at Universal Studios. These cool little old buildings that everyone from Alfred Hitchcock to James Stewart, all the creators were in these little bungalows. They're really nondescript and sort of smelly, actually, because they're so old. And we sat in this room, and we just had about a 20 to 30 minute chat when I met him on Dune, and we didn't talk about the movie at all. We talked about growing up in the Northwest. We talked about our mutual love of red wine. We just kind of rambled, you know, what we did when we were kids, riding our bikes around, what it was like at night, the sound, the smell, the feels of the vibe of being in the Pacific Northwest. And I think he just felt really comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think when he gave me the script, I don't think he really, you know, he still didn't know if this guy can act. And, you know, it's not that important. But anyway, But we did a screen. I did a screen test with him, and that screen test is when the bond really established itself. And we just and I'd never been in front of a camera before. This is the first time.
Wow.
With a movie script, looking at the camera, someone doing my makeup and hair, because I was from the theater. We did our own stuff. You know what I mean? I was like, what are these people doing? And they were like, oh, we're just going to do that. I was like, okay, that's fine. So it was all new. And he was right there for me. And he was pretty new for him, too. I mean, he'd done some shorts, and he'd done Eraserhead, and he'd done Elephant Man, of course.
Yeah.
Brilliant films. But he was still pretty new as well.
But I love that he had that intuition to just be like, listen, he can act, but do I want to spend time with this person?
Oh, interesting.
Like, is this a person I want to spend time with on this set?
I think it was more than that. You're very perceptive, because I think it was more than just, oh, but there was a connection there.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, and that was there through our entire relationship.
Yeah.
You know.
Which was long. I mean, you collaborated for a long time.
83 until just recently, this year, so.
So, watching something Lynchian, some of it is not accessible, really, to some people.
Yeah.
And it becomes apparent, or I would imagine, that it wasn't always clear to you what was happening.
I was clueless most of the time.
But, I mean, did you, over those many years, though, did you start to learn the signs or the language shorthand? Or
kind of. I kind of knew where he was going.
Puzzle.
In the moment.
Yeah.
I got that. But the pieces, the assemblage, the putting together of the film was all David, all here. And why one thing would lead to the next, and why he chose a particular angle, a particular lens, the rhythm of a scene, what music he was thinking that was going to go in, what was the sound going to be behind everything, and that was his genius. He just knew, and he also really loved happy accidents, if something happened during filming, someone made a mistake or did something different, and he'd be like, no, keep that. He loved when that happened. When we were filming Twin Peaks, there was a scene, and we talked about it, in the hospital room, and the lights were flickering, and there wasn't anything that the electrics could do about it. So they said, well, just when you walk in, the guy was sort of flicking the light switch, and he said, we've got some problems with the electricity, and he was like, we're trying to fix it. There it was. Okay. Now it's in the scene, And he did there was another weird thing. This guy was so funny because he was like, I asked him a question, like, is this room available for us or something? Some kind of just question like that, really kind of fast and blurby. And he went, Jim? He thought I asked him his name. David said, we're keeping that. It's like life, right? That was the thing about David. It was really about the realness of life.
Yeah.
The unexpectedness of life.
And there are bizarre, surreal, random things that happen all the time.
All the time, And the tendency on film is, that's too weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And David loved that, But that's art. I say David, he is a true artist. And people talk about the fact that he followed his muse, he followed what was happening inside, how he felt. There was no other guide for him but what was coming out from his unconscious and his belief in that. Really powerful stuff. It's really powerful as an actor working with him, looking at that, going, God, it's inspirational.
You wrote the most beautiful New York Times essay passing.
Thank
it really, it's worth looking up.
Thank you. I was so honored to be asked, to say, write something for the New York Times, nice about your friend. And I said, I would love to.
You describe him as a lifelong mentor, though, for you. Can you sum up, what is guidance he gave you that you still hearken back to?
Black coffee. Really just comes down to black coffee.
Just fixes all your ills?
All your ills go right away. And some cherry pie occasionally. That's pretty good.
I mean, it's just one of the best characters.
He was one of
in
the
entertainment.
Greatest characters. One of the greatest introductions, too. Driving up the mountain.
Yes.
You know, I mean, with
talking
the tape recorder.
Talking to, what's her name?
Diane. Diane. How could you forget Diane? For God's sake.
Tell me about the last time you saw him. It was with Laura Dern,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, with Laura Dern. Yeah, we were... So David lived close to me, actually. And he had a... He was suffering from emphysema at the time. So he... When you went over for a visit, he liked to be outside, which in L.A. you can do. Harder here. So we would be sitting on his back. He had like kind of a back... kind of a patio. And a long table, and because of the emphysema, he didn't want to have close contact with anybody, just in case. He didn't want to catch anything, which was true, and which was right. So we would sit at one end of the table, Laura and I, and he would sit at the other, and we would just talk, and he'd be there sitting, remembering, reminiscing, laughing, talking about some things that we wanted to do still. He was very much about the next thing, yeah, and trying to figure out a way to direct, but to do it remotely. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be an option. And it was, and there was no, like, certainly he was not in the best of health, and, you know, but there was like, you know, we got more work to do.
Yeah.
And that was how we left it. And we would, he loved a chocolate croissant and a big cup of coffee. So I went over to, we'd go to Porto's, which is this really great bakery in the valley, and get some croissants there and bring them back and, you know, open up the box, and he'd be like, yeah. It was like a donut. You know, you'd think the donut would be, but it was always a croissant. He would just stuff the donut. And so much fun. So much fun.
Okay, last question. So for a lot of people, Twin Peaks did define, like, this part of Washington, you know, culturally for a while. But this is home to you.
Yeah.
How have you seen this place change? What keeps you coming
I
back?
I do. I, you know, Washington is it's two states for me. You know, it's the West Side, East Side. I grew up in the East Side. You know, much different, obviously. And then the traverse between Yakima and Seattle, which I did many times back and forth between going to school at the U and going through North Bend, when you had to drive through North Bend, you know, before the circumvented. And, you know, it's the same, but it's, you know, it's just a little bigger, a little faster, a little more populated than when I was here, you know. And but the beauty remains, the people remain just so friendly and so nice. And then this just beautiful forests. When you drive through there, you know, and the mist comes down off the trees, it's like, this is one of the most beautiful drives in the world. And I was a kid, I was like, ah, can't wait to get there.
Trees, so
God,
many trees.
More fucking trees.
I know.
Stop talking about the trees. But they're so beautiful. Yeah, I guess we grow up and mature, right?
If you like this episode, you should definitely go back and listen to the David Lynch episode of Wild Card if you haven't already. It is just an amazing experience. And if you haven't listened to our full episode with Kyle MacLachlan, be sure to check that out as well. This episode was produced by Romel Wood with help from Lee Hale and Taylor Hutchison. It was edited by Dave Blanchard and mastered by Kwesi Lee. Wild Card's executive producer is Yolanda Sangweni, and our theme music is by Ramtin Arablouei. We'll be back in your feeds on Thursday with a conversation with former First Lady Michelle Obama. We'll talk to you then.